Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Dots of Thoughts podcast that is under the podcast platform called Nkata Podcast Station. All right, so today I am going to continue the conversation that is a series which explores the idea and the concept of time. I have a series of conversation running under Dots of Thoughts that is focused on exploring our concept, our understanding, and our perception of time. And the series is called Time Does Not Pass. We, on the other hand, pass through it and make forms of it. So what I do is that I begin a thought, exploring it, and then eventually I reach out to an individual via a phone call and then invite this individual to join me in the conversation for us to expand and flesh out and ruminate on some of the strands that I've pulled up. So that's it, basically. So far, there's been two parts to it. The first one being like an introduction, giving an idea of what we are likely to expect from the series of conversations. And then the second part is a conversation with the visual artist who is currently based in the United States, in Alabama, to be precise. In that conversation, we focused on looking at time as an element of self-expression and agency. And today, I am going to be looking at time in relation to our understanding and perception of age. You know, we are born, we grow up, we mature, and then what is left for us is to grow into old age and eventually die. So this is basically how we measure our time and our existence here on Earth. But today we are going to be looking at what is encapsulated within that linear measurement of time. Is it possible to look at time beyond the limitation of age? How does it really operate for us? You know, when we turn 40 or 45 or 50 or thereabout, we start to talk about midlife crisis and all of that. But how does it operate? And this is basically some of the things that I'll be discussing within this episode. And to do that, and to help me really enter this conversation, I am going to reach out to Jay Redza. Jay Redza lives in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. What's interesting is that we met as far back as 2007, but we haven't actually physically met. We met online and we have stayed in touch since then. So that's like about 13 years now. So here's what's happening here. She lives in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. I am here in Berlin. So she is basically on a different time zone and I have been on a different time zone. But there is this time zone that we share, this communal time zone that we share over the years. It's not all the time that we explore or that we make use of this time zone because we are not always in contact. As a matter of fact, we only reestablished communication not too long ago. But it's so interesting that we have known each other all this while and stayed in touch, but we have operated somewhat at different timescales while sharing a sort of like a connection, a time connection. So we're going to be discussing some of these thoughts and to just basically expand on them and see what comes out of it. I'm going to connect with her through Zoom. I can already see that she's connected. So I'm bringing her in so that we just get going with the conversation. Oh, there she is. Hello.
Hello. Can you see me?
I can see you, yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How are you?
Fine. Wow. You're glowing.
I'm glowing. It's the sleep.
Amazing. When you say good sleep, is it like you've been sleeping your way into the new year or something?
I think I've just been resting a lot this past week and just really taking it easy, you know, just to like reset. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the past year, just to recap everything and take that time to just sit with it and then review everything and also just to just not worry too much about what's to come or whatever. It's just to also take it as just another day, you know? Because I feel like there's so much, everything is still on hold and it's not like things have changed overnight just because it's like 2022 to one, and then like, oh yeah, we can all travel again, or yeah. We're all still stuck at home. And you know, for me, it really felt like a delete button. I just, you know, like reviewing everything, but also forgiving everything, and you know, taking mm-hmm. in what I've learned and coming to terms with a lot of things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was it like for you?
Well, for me, it's been interesting. On one hand, you want to have the sense of resetting and refreshing, but you also know, on the other hand, that it's just the next day, you know, just the next day. It's like all of a sudden, everyone is superstitious, you know, and believing that everything that came with 2020 is going to leave with 2020. And we are in this new year now. So I sort of like, I'm part of that. I participate in that because, you know, this is what we are doing as human beings. But then, it's been also a time of sort of like sitting down and say, okay, let's just give ourselves a sense of, resetting, and let's go again, you know. Yeah, so that's it. And speaking of which, this episode or this podcast that this conversation we're having is about time and how we understand and perceive time, and how we measure time as well. All our different conception and ways of measuring time. So I started with an introduction saying that we met some 13 years ago.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we haven't really met before.
Yeah. But we've always felt like we've met.
Exactly.
For me, anyway, I feel very connected to you, like as though I've known you forever, like as though I grew up with you since my childhood. For some reason, I feel that way with you.
Wow, it's amazing, huh? It's amazing. It's amazing. So again, what we're discussing today is this conception of time that is attached to age and place and proximity, yeah? All of this notion of time that you need to have the person close to you, need to have spent presence with the person. And we also look at it in a linear way. Say we were born today, we grow up, and then we get old, and then we die. All this like linear way of looking at time. But within that time frame, within that linearity of time that we see, how does it operate? And one of it is what you just said now, that is as if we've known each other since childhood, you know?
Yeah, it feels that way.
So I want us to really discuss that, you know, to sort of like ruminate on that a bit. This notion of time, and we're going to come to other aspects as well, like many things that we have in common. For example, we are born the same year, so
yes,
there is that coincidence of while your parents were giving birth to you somewhere, my parents were busy doing the same year.
Yes. <You know>? Now that you put it that way.
Yeah. And so we have been having our own time zones, but also sharing a kind of a time together in a way. We have a common time we've been sharing, and we've shared that for at least consciously or being aware of that since we met in 2006 or 2007. So how do you even begin to discuss this within the concept of time?
I mean, from my perspective, I think when I met you online, it was an instant, almost like a recognition, like a soul recognition, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Like how I said just now, you know, it feels like I've known you since childhood. And I have no idea why. There are some people who I meet who I have no recognition whatsoever. Even if I spend, say, like so much time trying to get to know them, there's a disconnect. And with some people, there's just an immediate connection, and also the work that you were producing then and everything. And it was just, it was very similar to mine. It was about breaking boundaries, you know, things becoming one,
mm-hmm.
enforcing that oneness, I guess. And I completely connected to you on that level, I think. And there wasn't many people doing that, mm-hmm. like, you know, fully concentrating on that.
Yeah, for me.
Amongst the artists, you know, they usually, most artists are very into their own thing and mm-hmm. all that. The humanity side,
mm-hmm.
I guess, I meeting you was that connected mm-hmm. me to you, I think, because mm-hmm. I was very connected to that as well mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. a humanity place and races and all that. And I was going through a lot of my own questions of identity because I'm very mixed, mm-hmm. you know. My parents, both of my parents are mixed. Mm-hmm. So I've got Indonesian, I've got Sri Lankan. My dad is Sri Lankan and Portuguese. My mom is Indonesian and there's a bit of Chinese in there. And so it's a very mixed up family mm-hmm. that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And in Malaysia, majority of people are Malay, Chinese or Indian. That's how they categorize everything. But that's not the truth really because... Mm-hmm. We have all evolved from many races, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know. So, I mean, we all have African in us.
Yeah, exactly.
No, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and the whole everybody wants to fight black or white. No, we're all Africans. Yay!
Yeah. Africa is a concept of journey of expansion of humanity. In that sense, we are all Africans, and we can also point out exactly where all of that went wrong. But anyway, this is not our conversation today. I also remember that we was like young when, you know, back then it was 2006. Mm-hmm. We were like 26. And so we were full of life and discoveries. We wanted to get to know. Our concept of the world was, you know, was broad, and we just wanted to sort of like explore it. So while the whole idea of meeting online and communicating online became very pronounced in the last year, you know, there were people like us who sort of like saw that as a way to create a different kind of time, you know.
Time tunnel.
Yeah, a time tunnel.
Of meetups.
Yeah.
Of meeting.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I was going to ask now, you know, so since then, has it been for you, you know, this whole, if you look back, if you say, okay, let's use, you know, our first encounter online, I think it was even Yahoo Messenger. If we say, let's use that as a marker to now look back and look all the way back to now that we are having this conversation like this again, this time on Zoom. So how do you think your life has evolved? How do you see that in relation to everything people have told you about how time passes, flies, don't spend it, don't waste it, earn it, save it, all those things that people say?
I think people think too much. We overcomplicate everything.
Yeah.
I think we have a tendency as human beings to overcomplicate everything. And mm-hmm. there's always this, like, we always, I guess on some level, we must think that by having some sort of rules or advice and things like that matter. And on some level, it does matter. Mm-hmm. But on another level altogether, I feel like when I look back, there's so many things that people have said, don't do this, don't do that. You have to be this, you have to be that, and you have to do it like this and take this road because if not, you're not going to get anywhere. And I've had so many people tell me, like, because I practice multiple art forms, mm-hmm. like dance, you know, choreography, mm-hmm. Photography, painting, different things. And mm-hmm. growing up with all of it, I've had so many people oppose me, like constantly tell me, you have to choose one, Jay, choose one. Which one do you like more? And I've never really gone by rules growing up, mm-hmm. also because both of my parents are artists and it's a very artistic home that I grew up in. So it's not a little bit, it's a lot different than most homes I realized while growing up with, say, my friends going to their homes and everything. There were more rules in their homes mm-hmm, mm-hmm. compared to my home. Was a bit more relaxed and it was about breaking rules. My parents would sit me down and ask me about, you know, if I followed my friends mm-hmm. by how they live or how what they are doing, and I come back all excited and I'm all fascinated with them or whatever. And my parents would sit me down and say, wait, that's your friend. Mm-hmm. What about you? Mm-hmm. what do you want to do? Like, are you going to listen to them or are you going to listen to you?
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with this very strongly imprinted in me since childhood in my home. And both of my parents are eccentric artists, you know, very strongly opinionated
mm-hmm.
people. So it's just for me, when I look back, I don't feel like I've lost out on anything by not choosing one path or whatever. I've always done multiple paths at
mm-hmm,
once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has never really restricted me or whatever. Some people say, oh, you'll never be, you know, where you need to be or whatever. Where is that you need to be anyway mm-hmm, for mm-hmm. me? It's like this idea of success or whatever, it's a very subjective matter.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, I mean, it would be wrong to say, oh, yeah, you have to be focused on something or whatever, especially for me at that age. I was already a mom.
Mm-hmm.
I was already a mother at the age of 23.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I became a single mother at 25.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was juggling work and I was taking care of my daughter as well. I was, you know, while my friends were all still partying and traveling the world, did not have any responsibilities. You were, or you didn't have your kids yet either.
No, I was one of those who were traveling the world and having, but I was working. But that's another matter.
Yeah,
I was working.
So for me at that age, I was already juggling mm-hmm. my daughter as well mm-hmm. on top of that. Mm-hmm. So it was always on the road, on the go kind of thing. And I think when I look back, I'm kind of glad that I think I was very driven
mm-hmm.
as a young single mother. Mm-hmm. I think I was very driven. So I've always worked, explored my arts and everything. And it's taken me many places mm-hmm. and it's given me the opportunity to meet so many amazing people. And mm-hmm. I think that's what matters most to mm-hmm. me from my life experience. I mm-hmm. feel like the people I meet is what I keep deeply in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think during that time, it was like I just started getting online and, you know, connecting to you, a few other people internationally mm-hmm. and all that. So it was a very exciting time for me. And I've never really stuck to one group as well growing mm-hmm. up. Well, growing up, I always had pockets of different friends everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I never really like some people, they grow up with their friends mm-hmm. since they're five and they're still friends till they're 40. They're still around the same group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've changed probably like 40 times by now,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know, different groups of friends. And mm-hmm. I still connect with some of them. I still keep in touch with them, but I don't see them often. I keep moving. I keep, you know, exploring different territories.
It seems to me that you are sort of like, because you also talked about how you do multiple things and you consider all of them together and you don't sort of like arrange them in a linear way. You just do them. You know, what do you think sort of like prompts this way of being?
I think it comes from, I think it strongly comes from my background with both of my parents being artists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think they've always encouraged me to explore different
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Like my father was an art critic, art historian, painter, sculptor, writer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was multiple things. And then my mom is a lecturer as well. My dad was an arts professor as well, historian. Mm-hmm. So there's multiple things.
Yeah.
In each of them yeah. already. So they never restricted me
mm-hmm.
since childhood. My subconscious has always been not really like boundaries, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's not really like my parents didn't instill that in me. Like mm-hmm. they just told me to get out there and explore, learn. As long as you're learning, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know something, that's the best place to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to know everything. Then you keep your life exciting. And that's how I grew up. You know, my parents split up as well. So I had two houses instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was having, this house is a little bit, not so good this week. I'm going there.
that's really interesting. That's actually interesting that you brought this up. I'm going to talk about that now because this whole splitting up, because we can't talk about time without talking about how we configure our nuclear family within which a child grows up. because it's also a process of that time. And usually it is both parents living together. But then what happens, how is it like when, you know, parents separate and live in different houses yet maintain a relationship that will make the child not feel like it's a bad thing for them to live apart? So does that affect the conception of time and how you see time?
I think we get used to things as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like for people who come with one house, that is their what they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
For people who have to live with two houses, yeah, I mean, at first I think it was really difficult for me because mm-hmm. I had to, you know, I would leave my books in one house and then I forget the other one, that house, and then I go to school and then I get scolded and mm-hmm. I'm like, my book is in my dad's house. And like, next week, you know, I'll bring it, I promise. It's like, you know, with this kind of problems, yeah, I had this kind of problems growing up. But I think aside from that, I mean, for me, because of that, I think I grew up also loving being in the streets
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
instead of being at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad had a wife and then, you know, my mom's house, and we were staying with different friends and mm-hmm. stuff. It was very bohemian. My childhood was very bohemian, mm-hmm. so it wasn't really typical. And I loved being in the streets. I just felt so free being
yeah, the
street streets,
being
you know?
When you are crossing from one house to the other, the transition space. Very interesting. But now I was going to ask you now, you know, in every society, you still get that pressure of time, you know, and for women is even more. In our culture, it's like every gender, you know, has their own specificity to it. For men, it is, when are you going to buy that house, that car, get married and take care of your wife?
Societal pressures.
Societal pressure.
Yeah.
For the women, it is, you know, when are you going to get married, have children, da, 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 da. I know that you... So how did you deal with that pressure of time?
I think my parents never really, like, set any, like, expectations on me.
Mm-hmm.
On that level, they were very open-minded, both of them. And then I was the one who wanted to get married really early.
Mm-hmm. Why?
I wanted to have Malena. I wanted a child. I think because I didn't grow up having a home,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
like one house, mm-hmm. and this is where the societal programming comes in,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, growing up, I had two houses. I always longed to have one home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to get married. I wanted to have my own family and everything. And then when I got married, it was nice. But, I mean, I wish, of course, it would have lasted longer. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I had Malena out of the marriage. So mm-hmm. it's not all for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I still have Malena. So it's like, it was a great experience for me, like, to know what that was about. But I think for me, it's not really like something I must have, you mm-hmm. know. After I got divorced, I think, of course, like you say, societal pressure. It's like, oh yeah, everybody around me would try and hook me up with somebody mm-hmm. or try and, you know, say, you know, you should get married, have a man take care of you and everything or whatever. But that comes with another thing as well. Mm-hmm. It's like another responsibility. Actually, mm-hmm. you know, to be married, you have to take care of the man. You have to, mm-hmm. you know, like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things you have to do being married as well. Like,
so
you
Did you like feel like, okay, now that I'm divorced, like time has freed up for me?
Yeah, I felt free.
Is it like I can live 200 years now in one day?
No.
It's like, okay, I can do whatever. Now it's like I'm invincible time-wise.
I think for me, if you're happily married, I mean, I know some people who are happily married, and that's fabulous. You know, I think it's such a beautiful thing to be married to your soulmate and mm-hmm. to have that connection where you can just keep growing together. I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's a huge commitment, or it's a huge, I mean, not everybody has found that, I think.
Do you think that when you got married and you saw that it wasn't working out the way you wanted or the way you envisaged, was it also synonymous with you thinking that time is closing up, like becoming more constricted?
I felt constricted before the divorce, but I think when I look back now, I think I was in a very unhappy place, and I felt like I wanted to work things out, but I also felt like there was something bigger than me that I couldn't even find the door to, mm-hmm. to figure it out. It was like the end. That's the other side to life that I sometimes think about and question, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, in many cultures, they speak about fate, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like everything has a cycle. Mm-hmm. Like there's 9 months before we are born. Mm-hmm. But, you know, baby is made in 9 months and then baby comes out and then, you know, baby grows up, and then like now Malena, my daughter, is 17. She's going to be leaving for Australia soon, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. that's another chapter altogether that
Amazing.
I'm going into.
Yeah,
you know, so and I'm gonna be single again. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be another level of completely
of
single, free
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so that's wow. another cycle again. It's like there's many cycles in life, and I find that fascinating.
Now, the last time we spoke, you know, informally, you said something about how, you know, even after all these years, you feel like sometimes like a 5-year-old, and it
yeah,
shows.
Still
it shows in you. Look, you're aging beautifully and gracefully. It's like I thought I was so like I don't look my age, but man, you make it look like I look my age. Yeah.
And this is something I think I've really looked into for myself as well. It's almost like I study this as well. Like, you know, I think it's all about energy. It's our energy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, whenever I worry too much or whatever, I can see myself aging, you know, and then when I shift my mind back, it's all about your mind
mm-hmm.
and how you set your body,
mm-hmm.
I find anyway, it's like in my mind, I still feel 24.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel 5 sometimes with my daughter when I'm playing with her or whatever. Like I've always kept that childlike side to me. I think also because my dad was the same. My dad was, you know, he died at 67, but till 67, you know, in the hospital when he was dying, he was, you know, when I would come with my daughter, he would stand up with a tube and everything, you know, with a drip and everything, sick, but he's still dancing in the hospital. You know, it's the spirit, you know, it's your spirit, mm-hmm. how you celebrate life, I guess. And for me, I being divorced when I was 25, I had met so many people who would come up to me and say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, you're divorced and I'm so sorry. They treat it as though it's such a tragedy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just don't see it that way because it actually liberated me. You know, I mm-hmm. think to stay in a marriage and be unhappy, that's actually worse. And
worse
a lot
than,
of people
yeah.
don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I
exactly.
think a lot of people don't talk about that. And a lot of people stay married, being unhappy. And then the energy just goes to the children and it stays in the house.
Yeah.
You know, energy is energy.
Oh, interesting.
You can see they're not happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how we age, actually. If we keep that unhappiness within our soul,
mm-hmm.
and we keep, like, not good energy within us, mm-hmm. that's how we age, I feel. And I think that's what I work on most. Make it a practice, you know, to forgive everything. I think that clears a lot of, of stuff out of your energy, you know, and keeps your mind clear as well. Because a lot of the blockages that we deal as human beings, or we go into depression or whatever, is because we hold on to these ideas that are not in alignment with us. Nature has its own way, you know, and we forget that we are part of nature. You know, especially in this day and age, I think a lot of people are so online-based, internet-based, and, you know, people are disconnected from being in nature. This idea of who they should be, oh, I have to create some bigger idea to be more successful or whatever. This is just my personal observation anyway of our time now. Since we've spoken about the time before, and then now I'm older, I'm 40 now, and it's just looking at, you know, the younger generation having to grow up with internet, and it's just so much pressure of oh, I have to have this persona online and create this impactful life and everything. And it's like, you know what, relax, just get to know yourself a bit. There's so much to discover outside, you know. Get out there, be in the sun, explore the world, travel a bit, you know, stay off the phone for a bit. You know, it's like
the more you explore, the more your concept or your conception of reality expands, you know, and your conception of even time, because it's about moments, right?
We need to be more conscious of how we use the internet rather than it using us and sucking us in, you know. I think it's still relatively, I think we are on a consciousness level, I think, consciousness place of humanity, we are still learning how to use the internet properly.
What you're saying right now, I don't know if it is a function of the fact that we are like pioneers of internet connection and communication. We like pioneers, you know? Like, we've been doing this since 2006. But again, we are also millennials. And I always find that people in our age bracket, in our generation, sort of like have this almost like bridge-like effect, where on one hand, you understand, you know, the need to stay outside, you know, all of these forms of communication. But on the other hand, you're also using it. And I think that that is, for me, how I'm thinking about us now. Like, we are 40. We are going to 41. This is our fifth decade now. We just got into our fifth decade.
I didn't realize that until you messaged me that. I was like, fifth decade? Oh, my God. I'm like, Mika, don't do this to me.
Exactly.
Got a heart attack. I'm like, oh, I'm going to look younger this decade.
Yeah, you know, and I want to discuss this now, because this is at the point where you begin to get really sensitive about your age. First of all, the way it happens with me is that I tend to forget that this young lad I'm speaking to now, I'm like 20 years older than the person. But the person looks so adult to me. And I'm like, how? Like, how is that even possible that you are this like you are an adult? So I have to remind myself that, look, it's you who's gone far out, not the person. That it is so normal for a 20-year-old or 22-year-old to be an adult. But it's you who have not realized that you're on your way
you've
out.
Aged. You've aged, right? Yeah. You don't feel it because you don't feel time passing. But I think not feeling it is not such a bad thing either, for me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, yes, because I still feel 24. I'm like, you know.
But it's interesting. But now, this is also the period where we begin to talk about midlife crisis and all of that and da-da-da-da.
I think everything is a crisis if you make it a crisis. Make it an issue.
Yeah.
I think. For me anyway, I feel that with a lot of things in my life, like a lot, you know, I think a crisis happens partly because people make it such an issue.
So you think that midlife crisis
again,
is not
a
thing?
It's a societal programming, you know. It's even the whole crisis thing.
Do you sometimes once in a while feel a bit of the insecurity of being 40?
Not really. No.
Not at all.
I think it was more before I turned 40. The freak out was before I turned 40. I think after I turned 40, now I feel just the same. I feel I don't think too much, but that's just naturally me as a person. It's not in my habit or ways of being to compare too much. Mm-hmm. Like, I just take it as it comes. I take one day as it comes. So, like, at 40, I feel like I'm more grateful as a person. Mm-hmm. I think I appreciate the simple, smaller things more. I think I've let go of a lot of worries, you know, and it's a good place to be, actually. I'm really enjoying 40.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually really coming into my own person. I feel like for the first time, like, I'm really, like, really comfortable in myself.
And I was just thinking now, you know, I don't know if somehow, what do you think of this whole idea that maybe being 40 in our time is different from being 40 in the time of your parents, for instance. Do you think that way? Do you think that the bar have shifted, that we should be saying maybe like a fool at 60 is a fool forever, not at 40?
I think there's definitely more, our generation, we have a younger spirit.
Uh-huh, okay.
I think. Yeah.
Interesting, huh?
I think, I mean, from my personal observation, I feel like, you know, at 40, 50, I still have friends who are doing pole dancing and, mm-hmm. you know, exploring, you know, still out there doing whatever they were doing at 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think our parents' generation was, I think, more post-war kind of people, you yeah. know, like they're a little bit more conservative. They had yeah. that conservativeness to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which and seriousness, for us, yes. Seriousness, you know, and also not having internet and everything, it's more, I think, you're not so exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Our generation, since our teens, we've had internet. So we've already, like, had this merging of worlds, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, different things. We're exposed to different things on another level altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not really, our boundaries are less.
Mm-hmm.
I find.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, like, I meet some 5-year-old now in Malaysia and they sound American because they've been watching YouTube. You know what I mean? It's just like.
And we happen to be the schizophrenic generation that is, on one hand, have a part of our parents. And on the other hand, we have a part of the 5-year-old kid who speaks American with American accent now. So we are sort of like the mix of it, the in-between.
In between.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah, the transitional generation, I think, to, yeah. you know, what's to come.
Which I find very interesting, and that spiritually even, that it is important to sort of like discuss even further what this means. Like this generation, our generation, how we are playing the role of this transition.
I think this is quite an important role, I think, for our generation to play, because it's a very transitional place that I think we need a good balance, I think, because we can completely lose ourselves as well,
mm-hmm.
with all the internet, with all the things we're absorbing, you know, the younger generation. Some of them actually struggle mentally because there's too much stimulation almost. And,
yeah.
you know, and then insecurities are on high, you know, because they look at all this stuff online. It's like all these ideas of perfection, of what perfection is or how things should be, and then when they look at their own lives, it's not really happening. And then they feel less than, you know, because some people have, like, it's based on how many followers you have or whatever. All the systems that is in place now, it's quite damaging, I find, on one hand, for a person.
And they do not have the benefit of hindsight like millennials like us do have. Like, sometimes we can think back to when there was no internet and get a
yeah,
sense of...
Yeah, we can relate to that. They can't.
We can relate to what it's like to sit down in front of your work and do work without having any distraction from internet. We can relate to that. But they don't even know yeah. what that means. They don't know what it feels like.
Yeah, our children's generation, you know, they grew up with just, this is their world. Mm-hmm. This is how world should be. It's based on followers, it's based on whatever and all that. And I think for me, I try to really enforce this to my daughter, that these things don't matter, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really have to enforce it to her. I think when she first started having Instagram, she was like, oh, I have only how many followers or whatever. And I really have to teach her what her self-worth has to be based on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I think our generation needs to enforce that more for the younger generation to mm-hmm. help them transition
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
with a good sense of self-worth. I think mm-hmm. that's very important as a woman, as a girl, or any human being, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, to have that sense of self that is not based on what your internet presentation is. That's where the danger is, I find. Like, you know, and it's not just for my daughter's generation. I find even with the women still at my age, some of my friends are going through it. You know, they feel that they're not beautiful enough because everything is so polished. Everything they see of other women are so perfect and, you know, photoshopped. Me being a photographer, I know what is involved in a photo. So it's like, but some of these women, they really feel like they're not worth it, or they're not, you know, good enough based on all this internet that they see.
What you're saying now resonates with the earlier part of this time series that I had, a conversation I had with another friend based in the US. He says something in the way of that he's not so interested in the idea of the future, that we're all talking about future, as he is interested in the notion of the future generation. And like you as well, we are all in that same age category. And so basically he was referring to that as well and saying that it is important that we find a way to get the future generation to understand that the way we relate, the way we connect. For instance, I met you through the internet, but it was a substantial meeting. It wasn't a waste. I mean, you opened up this conversation by saying that you felt we've always known each other, even from childhood. So it is substantial. We were able to ground that in something substantial. How can we get them to understand that this is substantial, that we can use the internet in a substantial way as opposed to as a place where your time just bleeds. And before you know it, the day is over. You know, you stay online, you browse, and before you know it, the day is over.
I think despite whatever you want to do online or whatever, mm-hmm. your sense of self has to be very strong.
Good.
As a person, mm-hmm. I think the core of who you are, mm-hmm. I think, has to be very strong.
Totally agree.
Then if your core is very strong as a person, you can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as growing up with people telling me like, oh, you can't do this, Jay, stop doing that, doing this, doing that. You just choose one and you do it and focus on that. Why can't I focus on multiple things? My mind, my brain has the capacity to do it. I do not need to live like other people who just do one thing and then they mm-hmm. think they're successful. But when I look at them, are they really that successful? They're still doing the same thing for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that an idea of what success is? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Not for me anyway. You know, for me, it's to constantly move. But if you have a good sense of yourself
mm-hmm.
and you are strong inside,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter what platform you use. If it's internet or whatever, you have to have a good sense of discipline for yourself.
Good sense of discipline for yourself. You are sounding like a millennial properly, because the truth is, when you say sense of discipline, this is how many of us grew up. Our parents will tell us, look, everything begins with a sense of discipline. And you know, that's the one thing that is flying off the window alongside, you know, this whole idea of the subjectivist era. So you are saying...
Yeah, but it's time management. I think time management is very important, whatever you do.
Wow.
And time management falls under discipline as well. I mean, I understand what you mean by the whole discipline thing. And this generation is trying to break that away and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think if you want to be good at anything, you have to have a sense of routine or something, like mm-hmm. practice, you know, like a lot of my friends, I mean, you know, I have girlfriends who are housewives and all that, and they wonder, like, how do I do this? Like, I'm a single mom, I have a daughter, I completely juggle by myself, and it's like, how do I do this? I have to have some sort of a routine, like, you know, how do they ask me, how do I look young? I have to have some sort of routine. You can't just throw everything out the window either. You have to have some form of practice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if there's no discipline, you're not going to function very well, I find anyway. But it's the same like with my photography. I didn't go to school for my photography. I was self-taught. Mm-hmm. But what took me somewhere was a sense of routine. Mm-hmm, every mm-hmm. day I would put how many hours, almost like I think when I had Malena, I discovered my photography and I was stuck at home as a mom, a young mom, and I was bored out of my mind. I was about to lose my mind from just feeding the baby, you know, every day. It's just any woman can go crazy, you know, especially since it was like for me, I had a career, I had a profession, mm-hmm. I had a very strong sense of career. So, and then all of a sudden, I was like breastfeeding all the time, I was going crazy. Photography saved my mental health, really, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. focus on something mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and to have every day some sort of a routine to work at it. And before you know it, you've already learned what others have taken 4 years in like 4 months. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I did not gain a lot by going to school. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I gained a lot by learning from the internet using it right.
And using it right.
Using it for my own knowledge, for my own gain.
One thing I want to add to all of this is that there is something called the wealth of time. I think that the younger generation, the future generation, I like to call them future, not younger even, because that's what they are. Oftentimes we think of time and money separately. But basically, you can be wealthy in terms of money, but there's also, if you have one thing that I have realized is that if you wake up in the morning and you are healthy in your body, that's wealth, because you have the wealth of time. It means that you can decide how to use your everyday.
Yeah, and that's what people forget, I think. Like, you know, we have become a society that is so money-based that we forget about our health. Mm-hmm. And there's these other parts of us that matter too, like our soul, our spirit, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Our spirit has to feel good. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If you don't have your health, no matter how much money, you know, like this past year, I lost 6 friends of mine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They died in their sleep. They died through heart attack, and a few of them very young, but died through cancer, you know. Wow. And this past year has really showed me that money is not everything, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. some of them come from very wealthy family with mm-hmm. a lot of money, and at the last few months, no amount of money
could save
can
them.
Save their life. You know
exactly. So when one wakes up in the morning and they are healthy, what they have is the wealth of time. That kind of wealth, you cannot save it. You cannot put it in a safe deposit and then go back the next day to take it. It doesn't operate that way. It is to be consumed in the everyday. More and more, I begin to understand why every spiritual teaching or doctrine puts a lot of emphasis on the everyday. Because it is within that time is abundant, but not in the next day.
To be in the present.
Yeah.
From my observation, whenever my mind gets stuck in the past mm-hmm. or in the future too much, mm-hmm. it's like my alignment is, I feel more tired actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's more tiring to be in the future or in the past. Yeah. So it's like, it's to bring your consciousness of your presence to the now mm-hmm. and to take things as they come.
Yeah.
I think it's actually more healthy because now is all you have. It's like, no amount of worrying about the future is going to change anything of the future anyway, right now. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And yet, you know, I like what you said about the sort of like anxiety and tiredness that comes from sort of like getting stuck in the past or thinking too much about the future. And I can relate to that, because what happens is that you remove yourself from the very moment that you live in, and you complicate that moment further by bringing in all these elements that has no place whatsoever in the now.
Like, you can't change the past. The past is done.
Well, living in the now, I think that's a really good note for us to say, like, end this conversation, which has been really, really enriching. And I'm so happy that we were able to have this conversation, because we were able to touch on different strands. And the way I would sort of like describe this conversation, or even define this conversation, is that it's a conversation between millennials. Yeah, it is a convention between millennials, and that at the core of it is that we have succeeded in discussing and reflecting on what it means to be alive in our time and the role that we play as millennials, as you know, in linking generations.
At the end of the day, I think it's very important for us to be aligned within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are very, very centered within ourselves, then anything from outside, you know, can come at us, and we're solid inside. People say like, oh, having faith is what you have to be religious. No, faith has nothing to do with religion. Mm-hmm. Faith is, you can have faith in yourself. Nothing is permanent mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. life. Everything yeah. is constantly changing, and it's to keep an open mind for what's to come, because we have no idea what is to come.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because you're talking about this precariousness of our time. It got me thinking of this poem by Rumi. It's just like an excerpt that I made from it. And it goes like, this being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. All right, Jay, thank you so much for this conversation.
Sending you good vibes, sending everybody good vibes. Thank you so much, Amitra, for having me.
And have a beautiful day, or it's night already for you.
Night, yeah.
Yeah.
Night, it's
raining now. Okay. So sleep well.
Okay. You too. And have a beautiful day.
Yeah, thank you. We keep talking, eh?
Yeah. And Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. All right. Bye bye, yeah.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So that was a beautiful conversation with Jay Redza. And you heard it all if you made it to this point. I hope this has been a beautiful conversation for you. And please leave a comment, you know, in your most preferred listening platform. By the way, for those who don't know, you can find this podcast at nkatapodcast.com/DOT. So Nkata is spelled NKATA and then podcast.com/DOT. Well, thank you so much for listening. And by the way, happy, happy, happy new year to you. I wish you a healthy and very fulfilling new year. All right, that's it. See you in the next episode. Bye-bye.